listen to the radio, and what do you hear? Mostly male musicians. Here's the alternative. Face the Music tilts the scales in the opposite direction with 2.5 hours of music performed, written, and arranged by women every Thursday, 7:30 to 10 p.m., hosted by Terry Reynolds.
Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features a contribution from Chico Soul and the California Report. Segments from KZFR community members include coverage of the Oroville City Council meeting by Maddie Vannucci, a segment on devotionals for trauma support by Hope Brianna Campbell, an update on the Salem Street Bridge Project by Hope Brianna Campbell, and news releases by David Foose.
This is Maddie Vannucci with Zephyr News. In an effort to make it easier for businesses to open their doors in Oroville, the City Council may be moving forward with a new fee incentive program aimed at filling vacant commercial spaces in the downtown area. This initiative traces back to February 2025, when the City Council established an ad hoc advisory committee to identify opportunities to reduce permitting requirements for businesses. The committee's recommendations for zoning and municipal code amendments, along with staff responses, were presented to the council in April 2026. Committee members requested that the entrepreneur-friendly fee incentive program be considered separately so it could align with the city's annual master fee schedule update. The entrepreneur-friendly fee incentive program, also known as Ordinance Number 1899, is designed to encourage new retail, service, restaurant, and lodging businesses to occupy vacant commercial spaces throughout downtown Oroville. Under the proposal, businesses located in commercial buildings that have been vacant for at least 6 months would qualify for a reduced permit fee. Eligible applicants would have a reduced administrative permit fee of $50 or a reduced minor use permit fee of $500, depending on the approval required. The incentive would apply to any businesses new to Oroville. The program would remain in effect through June 30th, 2028, unless extended by the City Council. Council members said the incentive is about more than reducing permit costs. It's about creating momentum for economic growth.
I've been excited to see what the committee came up with, Councilmember Weber said. To enable and equip that spirit of entrepreneurship to foster and develop, that is really important because we need our downtown business area to be full and Oroville to be thriving. We want to make it easier for businesses to open, not harder. Weber also praised the community's efforts, saying members had been really diligent and demonstrated the passion necessary to move forward with the project. Vacant, neglected buildings cost the city money. They require more city services, Weber said. We want this push to benefit anyone to open a business in Oroville. Vice Mayor Smith echoed these sentiments, describing the proposal as an investment to Oroville's future. We do have quite a few empty buildings, Smith said. This is an economic development piece. There is a cost associated with this, let's be clear. But the hope is by doing that, we encourage entrepreneurship and investment into the community. We'll see some of these buildings change the whole complex of the city. It gives us some leverage in putting ourselves out there. You can look at it as a marketing investment into the future of the city. Councilmember Reynolds added that attracting businesses is only part of the equation. Their long-term success depends on the community support. The people can come, but we have to patronize them, Reynolds said. We have to shop there. We have to go there as a community. Amazon is so easy, but resist that when you can go downtown and support a local business. With Zephyr News, this has been Maddie Vannucci.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. Trauma can leave lasting emotional, mental, and even spiritual scars. For many people, the journey toward healing is a long one, often requiring support from counselors, loved ones, faith communities, or a combination of all three. A new devotional featured in the Chico Enterprise Record explores how faith can be part of that healing journey. This book, written from a Christian perspective, is designed specifically for people who have experienced trauma. Rather than presenting quick fixes or simple answers, the devotional encourages readers to take a small, intentional step towards healing while reflecting on Scripture and their relationship with God. Stated in the Chico Enterprise Record by Dan Barnett, he states that Chico licensed marriage and family therapist Natalie Stromberg, with a master's degree in psychology from Chico State, knows the reality of trauma. During a missions trip to Thailand for her church, she spoke with human trafficking survivors. "I encountered a familiar brokenness in their stories," she writes, "one that mirrored my own wounds from years of silenced trauma, cycles of revictimization, and a childhood marked by sexual abuse." It also states in the Chico Enterprise Record that Stromberg has written a deeply insightful Christian devotional filled with compassion, gentleness, and love. Each short entry offers a reflection on a key Bible verse and a prayer for the day. Slowly, slowly, day by day, the reader is asked to look beneath the mask that once kept you alive. According to the review, the author acknowledges that trauma affects each person differently. Experiences such as abuse, violence, loss, natural disasters, military service, or other life-altering events can have lasting effects that don't simply disappear with time. The devotional emphasizes that healing is often a process rather than a destination. In the Chico Enterprise Record, Stromberg writes, "Trauma often convinces us that we are invisible, unheard, or unworthy of care. Yet God turns that lie on its head. He does not dismiss your wounds or rush you past your grief. He bends low, draws near, and honors the depth of your sorrow. His presence does not erase your past, but it redeems it, weaving even your most hidden anguish into his story of love and healing." This serves as a reminder that while trauma can shape a person's life, it does not have to define their future. For many readers of faith, devotional resources like this can provide encouragement, reflection, and hope as they continue on their own path towards healing. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. The acting governor of California, Robert Rivas, declared July as Disability Pride Month. Rivas, the speaker of the California State Assembly, is acting governor because Governor Gavin Newsom, the lieutenant governor, and the president pro tempore of the Senate are all temporarily out of the state, making Rivas next in the constitutional line of succession. The Butte County Department of Water and Resource Conservation just released the draft Butte County Drought Resistance Plan, or County DRP. The purpose of the plan is to help the county be better prepared for drought. The plan includes a risk assessment, short-term response actions, and long-term mitigation strategies. The plan is available for public review and comment through August 28th. Homeowners with wells and septic tanks should take particular note. The county has scheduled two meetings for public feedback. The first is August 6th at the Forest Ranch Charter School, the second on August 11th at Durham Memorial Hall. Both meetings are at 6 p.m. Caltrans is doing overnight pavement rehabilitation work on State Route 70 from the East Street Bridge in Marysville south to the State Route 65 and State Route 70 split. The speed limit is reduced to 55 miles per hour through the construction zone. Motorists should plan for overnight lane closures in both directions on State Route 70 and temporary on and off ramp closures. The work is expected to be completed in early September. The goats are back. As many as 500 goats are grazing Middle Bidwell Park from Manzanita Avenue between Lindo Channel and Wildwood Avenue to 5 Mile. munching star thistle in the hot sun. Grazing areas will be cordoned off with an electric fence and warning signs posted. Please do not feed or disturb the goats and guard dogs. The city of Chico announced that the Notre Dame Bridge project was selected as a 2026 project of the year in the transportation category by the Sacramento chapter of the American Public Works Association, or APWA. The Notre Dame Bridge project creates a new connection between the existing north and south segments of Notre Dame Boulevard across Little Chico Creek. The project provides an additional route for emergency access and evacuation while providing pedestrian and bicycle connectivity between nearby neighborhoods, affordable housing communities, the regional bike park, and Bruce Road. That's two such awards for the city of Chico because the Salem Street Bridge Replacement Project recently received the same award. Hope Brianna Campbell has a story in this episode of Zephyr News about the Salem Street Bridge. The award recognizes outstanding public works projects that exemplify excellence in engineering, project management, construction, sustainability, and community benefit through the collaborative efforts of the entire project team. This has been David Foose for Zephyr News.
This is Maddie Vannucci with Zephyr News. Shannon Macpuso, former president of the Paradise High School Sports Boosters Club, was arrested Monday, July 20th on allegations that he embezzled thousands of dollars raised to support Paradise High School student-athletes. The Paradise Police Department opened an investigation in May after obtaining a report alleging that the Paradise High School Sports Boosters Club was possibly embezzling money fundraised for the student-athletes at Paradise High School. Macpuso is currently booked in the Butte County Jail for one count of felony embezzlement. His jail was set at $15,000. The press release noted that the Paradise High School Sports Boosters Club is an independent nonprofit organization and is not affiliated with the Paradise Unified School District. The arrest has left many students, parents, and community members shocked and disappointed. Ashlyn Vega, an upcoming senior and student athlete at Paradise High School, said she struggled to believe the allegations. "It's really sad to see another case of embezzlement brought to light, especially when the person accused is someone everyone knew as a good coach and someone who worked at the schools," Vega said. "In middle school, my friends and I, and pretty much the whole school, would always go talk to him in the halls. I was shocked. Everyone was close to Shannon." Jacob Dixon, another incoming senior and student athlete, said the allegations were difficult to process. "Sadly, I'm not surprised something like this could happen, but it's sad to see someone the kids trusted so much be accused of this," Dixon said. Savannah Meeker, who graduated in 2025 and wrestled under Macpuso during her high school career, said the arrest has changed the way she views someone she once considered a mentor. "It's disappointing to say the least," Meeker said. "He was a mentor to many of us, and while I'll always value the discipline I gained from him as a coach, knowing what allegedly happened makes it hard to hold the same respect for him as a person." Paradise Unified School District declined to comment beyond a brief statement. "We are aware of the recent arrest of a PUSD employee," the district said. "As this is a personal and active legal matter, we are not in a position to comment further." The arrest has also sparked discussion throughout the Paradise community, with many residents sharing their reactions on social media. One community member said, "I think it's possible for someone to have two sides. A person can genuinely care about the kids and still make terrible decisions. Maybe there were financial pressures at home. Maybe it was greed, or maybe it was something else entirely. We don't really know. I'm absolutely not condoning what allegedly happened, and if the allegations are true, there has to be some accountability. But hearing so many people share positive experiences about how he treated their children does make me wonder what led someone who was viewed that way to make such a devastating choice. Human beings are complicated, and sometimes the hardest part is trying to understand how someone can do both good and bad things." Many community members believe that there may be more people involved than just Shannon Macpuso. The investigation is still underway, and the Paradise Police Department is asking that those with potential information regarding this case call 530-872-6161. Reporting for Zephyr News, this has been Maddie Vannucci.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. The Salem Street Bridge has been part of Chico's transportation network for generations, carrying thousands of drivers, cyclists, and pedestrians across Little Chico Creek every day. Months after reopening to the public, the replacement project is receiving statewide recognition for the way it blended modern engineering with community needs. The project has been honored with an engineering award, recognizing the collaboration between the City of Chico, engineers, contractors, and project partners who work together to replace the aging bridge while minimizing disruptions and improving safety. The recognition highlights not just the finished structure, but the planning, designing, and construction process that made the project a success. Stated in the Chico Enterprise Record by Lexi Lin, construction took place between June and December 2025. The original bridge between 1916 was entirely rebuilt to improve safety and accessibility. The project aimed to preserve the historic character through the concrete barrier and historic arc, said Public Works Engineering Director Brendan Ottoboni. She also states that the new bridge features two travel lanes, 5-foot bicycle lanes, ADA accessible sidewalks on both sides of the bridge, improved roadway approaches, and long-term protection against scour and erosion. The city received funding for the project through the Federal Highway Bridge Program, administered by Caltrans Local Assistance. City officials say the Salem Street Bridge is an example of investing in critical infrastructure before failures occur. As Chico continues addressing aging roads, bridges, and utilities, projects like this demonstrate how thoughtful planning can improve both safety and reliability while supporting future growth. The award also shines a spotlight on the skilled engineers, construction crews, inspectors, and public works staff, whose efforts often happen behind the scenes. Their work ensures that essential infrastructure functions safely every day, even if most people only notice it when construction is underway. Also stated in Chico Enterprise Record by Lexi Lin, this has been a legacy project. It's been in the works for about 10 years, Ottoboni said, noting the necessary challenges that slowed the bridge's production down, like environmental studies and construction hurdles. The recognition is a reminder that infrastructure projects often leave a lasting impact long after the construction equipment is gone. For the city of Chico, the Salem Street Bridge replacement represents an investment in public safety, accessibility, and the community's future, one that engineers believe will serve residents for many years to come. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is Patrice for Chico Soul. This week, the challenges of extreme heat for local residents, what life is like at the controversial alternative site for unhoused Chicoans, and a Chico State professor's update of a legislative attack on the public's right to know. The kind of extreme heat increasingly felt in places like Butte County can be a serious problem regardless of what kind of dwelling a person has. A house, an apartment, even temporary shelters like the tents that unhoused residents resort to. When people in stable homes face economic hardship and struggle to pay their utility bills, extreme heat can become a serious threat. According to a recent CalMatters report posted on Chico Sol in both English and Spanish, California bars utilities from cutting off power to customers who fall behind on their bills when it's dangerously hot outside. CalMatters stated, quote, "As another stretch of dangerous heat gripped the state, the California Public Utilities Commission wrote stronger rules regarding shutting off power. In a 4-0 vote, the commission lowered the temperature at which utilities stop shutting off power to delinquent customers from 100 to 90 degrees, unquote. Unfortunately, we have heard of cases where utility companies have shut off the power to low-income residents. CalMatters reported that activists have had to push state regulatory agencies to redefine how to determine what heat level should be used to prevent shutoffs. Our reporting partner stated that the Public Utilities Commission, quote, has ordered utilities to adopt a more protective, region-specific heat standard within 6 months. Extreme summer temperatures also cause serious problems for unhoused people. Yu Cheng Tang's story on the alternative camping site the city plans to shut down next January provides a picture of what life is like for people there during hot summer months. When he spoke to a longtime resident of the site on a bright sunny day, Tang noticed she squinted under the harsh sunlight.
Because it's like, it's too hot, there's no shade, you know, and nobody wants to come out, and for whatever reason, they're just doing their thing inside. It's a, since there's nobody really living here anymore, you know, I don't see why they need employees working here now, when there was a lot of people, they didn't have no employees here, you know, to manage stuff.
Yeah, now there are 7 people, right, like, I think.
Right, or whatever, I mean.
Like others at the site, Elizabeth Isaacs said she has no idea where she will go when the site closes. The alternative site is a chained-on area at the corner of Eaton and Cohasset Roads, where people live in tents within 20 by 20 foot spaces. The site offers only the most basic amenities: a few portable toilets, a water hose, 2 barbecue grills, and a dumpster. Listen to a conversation recorded at the May 19th City Council meeting. You'll hear the then city manager, Mark Sorensen, as well as Amber Abney Bass, CEO of the Jesus Center, who works with unhoused people in Chico.
You know, all of these folks have different stories, different reasons for being in the position they're in. So I don't think we can give a blanket answer. You know, that's where Target Team really shines, because they typically know these folks on a first name basis and have a pretty good understanding of what their issues are and can at least try to get them moving in the correct direction. Mm-hmm.
I think I would just add a slightly, this concern around service resistant came up in every single homeless ad hoc committee meeting, and I was at all of them. And I think the thing is that it is a very nuanced term, because there are people that are service resistant at the moment. And, you know, Officer Jukestock made a really interesting distinction at one of those meetings where he said that it was contaminated thinking, or it was contaminated thinking contributes to those sorts of spaces for people, right? And I will just share that, you know, at 10 o'clock this morning, I interviewed somebody that I would have considered service resistant for 5 years when we were on Park Avenue. And so I think the thing is that there is value in continuing to show up, continuing to have the conversations, nurturing some accountability. We're not saying never, we're just saying not right now. We are in the business of holding people accountable and having to remove them from shelter when their behavior is not compatible with a shared living environment. And so I don't think one excludes the other. I think
that was Mark Sorensen and Amber Abney Bass speaking at a May 19th City Council meeting. The city established the alternative site under the Warren v. Chico Settlement Agreement, which required that the city provide a location for people who haven't qualified for the tourist shelter or the Genesis Pallet Shelter. The site's closure comes as the settlement agreement is set to expire in January 2027. In other news, Chico State Professor Aaron Quinn is again featured in Chico Sol's Now Weekly Commentary Series. His second contribution updates the status of a legislative proposal to drastically limit access to public records. Describing Assembly Bill 1821 author Blanca Pacheco as, quote, a karate black belt who loves to box, Quinn wrote that AB 1821 got hauled into a Los Angeles chop shop in late June. What rolled off the lift, he continued, is a shadow of the bill that had First Amendment lawyers howling. The wilted version of the bill cleared the Senate Judiciary Committee 12-0 on June 30th. Check out the rest of Quinn's analysis of Pacheco's proposal at chicosoul.org, or read his earlier warning published last month about the dangers he sees. Pacheco is a Democrat representing Downey in Southern California. The next stop for her proposal is a Senate Appropriations Committee hearing August 3rd. This has been Patrice for Chico Soul. Follow the latest at chicosoul.org. That's Chico, SOL.org.
From KQED.
My crew's coming in with our truck, so.
Anna Dozer runs Winter Sister Farm at Sevastopol along with her sister and a small farm crew.
There they go.
Dozer and her crew harvest from November to May. In line with their name, they grow winter vegetables like squash, kale, onions, and potatoes on about 4.5 acres. They sell crops at farmers markets, but for most of their history, Winter Sister Farm relied on community-supported agriculture sales, or CSAs. It's when locals commit to buying a box of crops every week from Winter Sister Farm for a season.
But sometimes that can be challenging people who are ready to commit to getting vegetables from a farm every single week through the winter.
And Dozer says drumming up more business is difficult for small farmers.
There's very little time to not be farming if you're trying to make money farming.
The Local Food Purchase Assistance Program, or LFPA, was meant to help small farmers like Dozer by directing more business to them. It was started by the Department of Agriculture during the Biden administration. Under the program, the USDA sends money to food banks and through a sister program, schools, to buy directly from small farmers. The federal program pumped nearly $90 million into the state for about 3 years.
The beauty of the LFPA was in its, like, simplicity.
Dozer says LFPA was easy to participate in because it funded the existing food networks.
Everyone was happy with it on all ends. You know, the farmers were happy with it, the cooperatives were happy with it, the food banks were happy with it, the politicians were happy with it.
But in March last year, USDA Secretary Brooke Rollins abruptly stopped funding the program, saying the LFPA was a COVID-era program that was no longer necessary. Here in California, that cut funding that helped sustain more than 500 small farmers and 35 food hubs across the state. Now, a farm bill, which is being hashed out in the Senate in D.C., looks like it'll revive a program similar to LFPA. Meanwhile, in Sacramento, Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill in June that will release $15 million to keep the marketplace for another year. But that's only one-third of the money small farmers were expecting through LFPA.
Half the farms are dropping off. We pick up from another bit.
That's Dylan Stein, the wholesale manager at the Farmers Exchange of Earthly Delights, or FEED, in Petaluma. It's a wholesale market run by a cooperative of about 30 farmers. It's where the small farmers bring their crops to be sold at restaurants, direct to consumer, or to local food banks and schools.
So, like, all the products coming in between 1 and 5, most has already come in now. And then
wholesale farmer cooperatives like FEED also took a hit with the end of LFPA. Stein says federal funding, including the LFPA, contributed about 25% of the cooperative's revenue in 2024. Now that money is gone. Stein is hopeful that there's bipartisan support for renewing such programs, but he's cynical about the farm bill passing.
How overdue are we for, like, how many farm bill extensions are we already on right now?
The answer? 8. Instead of passing a new farm bill, lawmakers have simply extended the old one for the past 8 years. And there's no guarantee the money will come back in the next 8 years. For the California Report, I'm Noah Abrams in Petaluma.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and Kezia Farr Volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's